Hey everyone, welcome to episode 13 of Superhero Speak. A couple quick announcements. If you haven't noticed yet, we've added a new category on our website called Kitty Corner. These are for all the articles that Ben didn't feel were rants. Mainly they're dealing with cartoons and thus, that's why it's called Kitty Corner. The other thing I wanted to let everyone know is, I'm now writing for a website called Movie Pilot. I've posted about 4 articles on there so far, and I'll be posting another one hopefully by the end of the week. So check them out. It's a great website. A lot of people sharing articles and stories about movies. So, this episode, this is John and I sitting down with legendary artist J.G. Jones. If you don't know J.G., he worked on such titles as Wanted and Final Crisis for DC. He sat down with us over Skype and talked a lot about the art industry. And he has some words of wisdom for people wanting to break into the industry today. So this was recorded on July 17th over Skype. Sit back, listen, and enjoy. And here we go.
Welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
This is John.
And today we are here with a special guest. You might know him as the penciler on Final Crisis and Wanted. But among other things, he's been working in the industry for a little while now. And he's worked on such books as The Avengers, Black Widow, The Itsy Bitsy Spider, Preacher, Painkiller Jane, Witchblade, Legends of the Dark Knight, and before Watchmen, The Comedian, just to name a few. And he, in my opinion, is one of the best artists in the industry today. So everyone, welcome J.G. Jones.
Thanks. Hey, guys.
Our sound effects machine is off, so, you know. Otherwise, we'd have, you know, adoring crowds yelling for your name.
Well, I could have done the drum roll for you, but
nah.
That'd be immodest.
A little bit.
Yes, this show is nothing but immodest.
So, I guess as we always start off things like this, a little bit about you. Like, you're originally from Louisiana, correct?
Yeah, I grew up near Baton Rouge, out in the sticks.
And was art always a part of your life growing up?
Yeah, I always drew from the time I was a kid and was interested in comics, obviously. Back in the good old days when you got them off the spinner rack at the dime store or the drug store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. One of my proudest things I actually got for my birthday this year was a spinner rack that I keep in my office and home.
I am so jealous.
Yes, my wife treats me well. And so who were some of the characters you read growing up?
I read everything, but I was really a huge Spider-Man nerd and a big Marvel nerd as a kid. I loved Fantastic Four. Read the Hulk. But I read everything. Read Batman, read oh my God, almost anything.
So was it then? You decided then when you were a kid, like, you wanted to be a comic book artist, and is that what you always pursued?
No, not really. I mean, I enjoyed them, and I liked to draw comics characters and whatnot. But when I was a kid, what I really wanted to do was be a horror makeup artist in Hollywood. I had a fascination with famous monsters of film land, and, you know, would sit up on Saturday night and watch the late night creature double feature and then have to go to bed by turning all the lights on the way.
Nice.
Yeah, that, it's funny. I actually have a friend who does it independently in New York, and it's a hard business. That's a hard business to get into. And I know comics probably isn't as easy either. But it's also, I mean, it is another form of art, definitely. I've seen some of the stuff he's done, and it's amazing. And I could see the appeal there. So then, did you pursue that? How did you fall into comics then?
Well, I was always, like I said, a huge comic nerd, and my I had an aunt that worked at the magazine distributorship in Baton Rouge, and she would give me boxes and boxes of all the comics with the covers torn off, because that's how they got their returns. You know, they'd send the torn covers off and for the returns rather than send the entire magazine back. So I think it's kind of funny. Maybe that's why I ended up being primarily a cover artist, trying to replace all those missing covers.
Could be.
But I got into comics years later. I'd stopped reading, and then I was finishing up my graduate degree in teaching at SUNY Albany, and students were bringing like Dark Knight and stuff, and I was completely unfamiliar with it. So I started reading again and really got hooked on Mike Mignola's pre-Hellboy stuff. And
he's
just my favorite, you know. Love the stuff he did, that Wolverine book he did at Marvel, the Apocalypse book, and for Ferd and the Grey Mouser, all that, you know, Fritz Lieber stuff that he did. And just started getting back into comics again, reading.
I feel bad because I was one of the people that was actually tearing covers off. I worked for Walden Books. Partially kind of how I started getting into comic books, because I had, you know, the covers sent back, and I had all these things that I was told to throw away, and I'm looking at them going,
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag, because I could never have afforded to buy all those comics. You know, I didn't have that much pocket money at the time. So at least I got to read them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did you keep all those comics?
Oh, no. They weren't worth anything as far as collecting goes. And over the years, my small collection just got trashed, and I eventually gave it away to a friend of mine who's a big collector. I'm not much of a collector of things.
Mm-hmm. So you went to school in Albany, and you went there for teaching, you said?
Yeah, I went there for fine art, and then moved down to New York City after I finished my degree, and was working at a newspaper there, the Brooklyn paper. And a friend of mine, Jonathan Larson, who worked at the paper as a reporter at the time, was also into comics really big. So we just kind of wrote a comic together, and I drew about 5 or 6 pages, took them over to Comic-Con in New York, and Jim Shooter hired me on the spot.
So what was that book?
It was called Rant, and it's really embarrassingly bad. I still love the character and would like to revise him one day.
Cool. What was his powers, I guess?
It was a vampire story way back when nobody was doing vampire stories, which is probably why I won't touch the thing now. Let all of that cool off for a while.
Yeah. Did your vampire sparkle?
Oh, no.
Oh, God, he glowed all over the place. Well, don't make me come through this phone.
So was there like a particular artist that you found that you liked or that inspired you when you were starting out in this field?
All of my childhood influences were still in place. You know, Frank Frazetta, kind of taught myself how to paint by looking at those old Bantam editions. And I loved all the black and white guys from the 70s, as well as, I guess, specific names. Ross Andrew was a favorite. His run on Spider-Man was probably my favorite run. And, oh my God, who else? I didn't really understand Kirby until I was older, and then I went completely bonkers over his Fourth World stuff when I finally figured out what was going on.
Yeah. I think a lot of people didn't get Kirby when Kirby was doing what he was doing, other than maybe Stan.
Yeah, absolutely. But once you get it, you can't look look away. You know, you can't peel your eyes off of that stuff. Kamandi was, you know, there were no comic stores with back issues. I had to go rooting through old secondhand paperback stores to find the things. So that's what I would do. I would try and find those and old Bantam Doc Savage issues. Oops, sorry about that.
And now for our intermission.
Right?
Modern technology.
Should have turned that off. Apologize.
No problem.
Problem editor looking for work. You're late!
So Shooter hired you, so I have to assume that was at Marvel.
No, that was post-Marvel and just post-Valiant. He was opening up Defiant and was looking for new talent. I guess he had Dave Lapham on board, but that was pretty much it at the time.
Oh, okay. And what was the book there then?
I worked on a title called Dark Dominion. I followed up Lewis Small, I believe, was the artist before me on that.
Okay, and how long were you there?
Until they closed the doors, which was maybe 6 months, 9 months, something like that.
So was this in the, I guess, mid-90s?
Yeah, early to mid-90s.
Right, that's when we had the boom, where we did have a lot of small publishers jump up and then fall down fairly quickly.
Oh, yes, we jumped up and we forgot to put our feet under us and we just hit the ground on our faces. That's how it happened.
So then where'd you go after that?
I followed Jim over to his next company, Broadway, and I did a book called Fatal.
Okay.
And 6 issues before they also went under. And then I went over and worked for Billy Tucci for a while at Crusade.
Oh, okay.
You've done writing too, I think?
I've always written along the way, but I really have had very little published until a Doc Savage story a couple of years ago that I'm still very bitter about. So I wrote 6 issues, and they published 5 before the license ran out, and the final issue never came out.
Oh.
I think they finally released it on DC Digital, but, you know, who cared at that point?
Oh, so there's a number 18, because you did 13 through 17.
18, that's it, yep.
And I'm sure that was the conclusion of the story that no one got when it was in print.
Exactly!
Of course. Would you ever go back into writing, or was that just something that inspired you?
I'm writing things now. I have a graphic novel that I'm trying to find a home for that's completely written but needs to be drawn. And I'm working on writing an action-adventure ongoing that will probably need a home sometime next year. So, yeah, I definitely keep my hand in writing.
Do you draw any of the stuff that you write, or do you try to keep that separate?
Yeah, I do. The graphic novel I plan on drawing. It's just a matter of finding enough time and, you know, I got to find some financing to make it a day job so that it's not an after-hours job. So I stay pretty busy just with paid work.
Right.
I bet you've started a Kickstarter. I'm sure a lot of people would donate.
That's one route I'm looking at. Yeah, I'm pretty close to ready to go on that. So I hope to make that happen really soon.
I'm glad to hear it.
So you jumped around, I guess, from small publisher to small publisher. When did you end up at Top Cow?
Well, I had a long route before that. I went to Marvel after I worked for Crusade Comics and did that Black Widow and did Marvel Boy with Grant Morrison, which was just one of my favorite projects I've ever done.
Actually, it's funny, speaking of Grant Morrison, I just heard a great interview with him on Fat Man with Batman, Kevin Smith's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things about him that struck me interesting, that was very interesting, is he said when he writes his comics, he actually draws them out as well, but he never shows them to the artist. Did you know that about him?
Yeah, we've talked about that, and I actually saw all of his character designs and some of his layouts when we did Final Crisis together.
Okay.
We had a visit when we were planning the whole thing, and we just sat for about a week, and I went over to his house, and he showed me everything he had, and we actually sat and drew pictures together, which was kind of fun.
Cool. Does that, now, in a situation like that, though, does that hinder your process at all? Like, when he says, oh, this is what I was thinking, does it change your mind on what you were thinking for characters, or...
No, I like input. I'm the kind of artist that you can't give me too much, you know. I may have to edit things along the way, or if I have a different idea that I think works better, I'm always happy to chime in. You know, I'm not a shy person, but I like having as much information as possible from the writer, because then I can see exactly what he's trying to do, and maybe I can help out along the way, or, you know... I think of myself as the cinematographer and the writer's the director, and we're putting together a film.
Right.
So it's a collaborative thing, so more information is better for me.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of people that are, you know, interested in getting into comics, they don't realize that, you know, it's a visual medium, and it is drawings, but you're telling the story the same way that a movie tells stories, but you also have to... give a lot of pieces of information in one frame as opposed to 30 seconds or even 10 seconds on a film.
Absolutely.
To get into a little bit, you know, I mentioned the One It thing. I think a lot of people know that book, especially from the movie. And you worked with Mark Miller on that, correct?
Uh-huh.
Another one of my favorite writers, actually. And that's actually one of my favorite books. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Oh, thanks.
So when that exploded the way it did, were you guys expecting that, or?
I think it was a bit of a surprise. I've been a big fan of Mark's for a long time and had pretty much read all of his books along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I was surprised when I got his scripts at how easy they were, because he has a very visual sensibility as well, you know, like Grant does.
Mm-hmm.
And everything pretty much is in his script. You don't have to deviate a whole lot. It's all there. There's some writers you have to, like, add a panel or take things away to kind of clean up the story a little bit visually, make it read better.
Right.
But with Mark, you can just draw panel by panel, and it's all right there. I mean, he makes it easy for the artist, I think.
Cool. So, I guess, I think both of them, I've heard, they work full script?
Yeah, which I love.
Okay, I was going to say, I guess you prefer full script then, right? Have you ever done the Marvel method with anyone?
You know what? Maybe once or twice on short things. And it's actually more work to do it that way, because, you know, you should get a writing credit and get paid for that, because you have to do a part of the writing yourself.
Yeah, I've often wondered that too, because, I mean, the writer gets away with basically an outline and dialogue, and then it's up to the artist to really tell the story at that point.
Yeah. You have to figure out what the moments are. If you know what I mean, the little storytelling details.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of have to read the writer's mind and figure out what he was trying to do with a particular scene. Or, I'm not going to mention any names, but I've been working on a piece recently that came to me as just an outline, and I essentially rewrote the whole thing, just so it would work better as a piece of visual art.
Isn't anything we're going to see soon? Because spoilers are our bread and butter, really.
Yep. I have a few more pages left to go on it, and it'll be out the door by the end of the month. But I don't know what the publication schedule is.
And is it for DC?
It is something for DC.
Okay. So
it's spectacular.
Well, that's another thing, because you have worked in a lot of different aspects of the industry, and like you said, you've done a lot of covers. Where does your heart lie the most?
That's not a bad question at all, but I would say that my basic hang-up is that I get bored really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to do a year or 2 year long run on anything, I would just, you know, pull my hair out and go jump off a bridge or something. So I actually enjoy both very much, which is why I switch back and forth a lot. I'll do covers for a while. But anytime you dive in on long form doing pages, it's just, it eats your life. You have no life. I mean, all these guys, I don't know how guys stay on a book for years on end because it's such a grind. You have 20 pages each month you have to do in roughly 30 days. That doesn't leave you a whole lot of time to have a life, you know, and a lot of guys have families and kids, and it's tough.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are artists who were known for being on a book for a long time, and I mean, every time I see you at a con, you're sitting there drawing, and I imagine that a lot of the guys, you know, are in that same situation where, you know, they've got to work, and yeah, how do you have any kind of life outside of that when you're working all the time? I don't know.
It gets tough. It gets really tough, which is one reason I've scaled it back, and covers seem to be more manageable for me when I need a break, because you can take more or less depending on, you know, just some things like you get older, you have health issues you have to take care of and things like that, and family issues, you know, aging families, and you have to learn how to balance these things. Where when you're younger, it's just like, yeah, gung-ho, you know, draw.
Right. And have you ever found yourself in a situation where you haven't met a deadline?
Yeah. I mean, Final Crisis, it was a hugely disappointing thing for me because I was doing great on the deadlines, and then I had an undiagnosed illness. I didn't find out until after the book had, I had basically failed on the book and had to have help come in to finish it up. I got a diagnosis afterwards, but I had no idea what was going on at the time. I was just exhausted and would pass out at the drawing table and wake up hours later. I mean, it was... I don't even remember what the question was, but...
About missing deadlines.
And definitely intrude on deadlines, you know, and it happens to a lot of guys, not just your personal health, you have families, you know, things to take care of, parents pass, you know, parents get sick and you have to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things.
Before we go any further, without prying too much, I hope you're okay now. Is that?
Yeah. Everything's really cool now. It took a while to get everything straightened out, but now it's well managed, and it's not like something I make a big secret of. But doing good now.
Well, that's good. So you were in Albany when you got your degree in New York. Which, you know, is the hotbed for comic books, or at least it was at that time. And then.
Yeah, there's a reason it's called the internet. it barely existed then. Now, you know, we have artists, great artists from all over the world.
Right. I mean, and writers too as well. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Both Grant and Mark are not local guys.
That's right.
In the least. I know, we've talked about this, you're not in New York anymore. you're down in the Philly area. How did that end up happening? Why did you choose Philly as opposed to going back to Louisiana?
I like the Northeast a lot. Louisiana tends to be, you know, 100 degrees and 100% humidity 6 months out of the year, which is a little sticky and steamy.
Yeah.
And
kind of like the last week we've had here, but
yeah, well,
must have felt like home.
But there's the key word, week.
Yeah, true.
Don't get a lot of snow in Louisiana?
I think it snowed once when I was a kid. I love it up here. You know, I love New York. I think one reason I wanted to move to New York was reading Spider-Man comics as a kid. You know, seeing Spidey swing across the city. I had this obsession with living in New York. But New York got so expensive.
Yeah.
That, when I was looking, I was in New Jersey, and I didn't want to be out in the burbs anymore. So I decided, am I going to move back in the city? Or I got sticker shocked, and I remembered liking Philly a lot when I visited and came down here, met my wife, and decided that's where I wanted to move.
It always comes down to the women, doesn't it?
Yeah. If we're lucky.
Yes.
And I've been extremely lucky.
So I'm looking through all the stuff that you've done here because, you know, just I'm cheating. And you did a lot of Wonder Woman covers. You've done Doc Savage, more Doc Savage than the ones you just wrote.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Frankenstein, Before Watchmen Comedian, which I believe I remember there was some furor about the Before Watchmen series with the creator. And all the Final Crisis stuff that you were helped with by Doug Monkey. Okay, I was going to pronounce
that
it
guy's that. Awesome.
Yeah, Doug, Marco Rudy, and Carlos Pacheco. I'm going to probably get dinged for saying his last name.
Mr. Pacheco.
Yeah, and I've seen that you've actually quoted you really like Doug's art.
Oh my God, yeah. Huge fan.
Was there a question behind that?
I was going to that. What, considering all the stuff that you've done, and it seems like there isn't like much you really haven't touched or haven't penciled for something at one point or another, what would you like to do now? I mean, if you had your choice.
Good question. I would like to do more things for myself. I mean, I guess everybody would in the age of give it to Image and let them run with it. At this point I would like to do more writing and write more projects. Ideally, I'd like to have something for me to draw that I've written and something for someone else to draw going at all times. That would be my dream scenario. But, go ahead.
Oh, are there many options for that? I mean, you said give it to Image and let them run with it, but are there, I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff for self-publishing, but.
I was being a bit flip, but I mean, independent publishing now has become, I think it's finally hit its heyday. You know, we're in stride with these great independents in addition to the big two or big three, whichever way you want to look at it. If you want to put Dark Horse somewhere just below the big two, we have not just Image. I love their whole publishing concept, but we also have Boom and, you know, help me out here. There's a bunch of really good publishers out there now.
Xenoscope?
Yeah, absolutely. This guy's put out great product. IDW. It's the heyday of creator-owned stuff now.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I just read that Amazon is having their own imprint for comics coming up.
Yeah, I did see they were going to try that out.
The only thing with that is, though, that it looks like right now it's all digital from Amazon.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are still unsettled about the whole what's going to happen with digital, where it's going to shake out. But I have to kind of respect, like, Mark Wade doing his, help me out, what's the name of his online?
Oh, not sure. Our trusty co-host is looking it up.
Yeah.
Sorry, terrible. I should know this off the top of my head.
Well, I'm terrible like that. Oh, let's see, did the Flash, the Boom, he works with Boom Studios, Irredeemable, Incorruptible. He wrote that title. I don't know.
What's his online, though?
I have no idea. Oh, set up a free digital comic site. No wonder nobody wrote. Thrillbent?
Thrillbent. Absolutely. That's the guys. He writes an ongoing there and also uses it as a platform to publish other guys. It's just a matter of the difficulty in monetizing something you're giving away for free.
Yeah. So, and I guess, well, I mean, there's always figuring out, and this is something that I've been wondering about, figuring out how to do advertising within digital comics that's, you know, even maybe relevant, where they can come up with a model where the ads can update if the comic's sitting there, you know, for a year, sitting there for two
right.
years.
Right. You
know, we actually, it's funny, our day jobs that John and I have, we actually work for an online advertising company. So, you know, that kind of stuff is possible. It's just figuring out the models to get that to work. But I think that's probably where the profits have to come from with anything online that's advertising right now. So,
yeah, it's pretty tough because once you put something out digitally, it can be obtained for no cost anyway, even
right.
if the initial person paid for it. Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering also, you know, if somebody wanted to collect your stuff. And if it's, you know, it's hard to say, yeah, here's my collection and hand them a 64 meg little HDMC, you know, micro card.
Sure.
There really is no collecting at that point, I guess.
Yeah, we're kind of on a fulcrum here. It's not exactly like, I was going to say it's similar to what happened in music a few years back,
mm-hmm.
you know, settling out the new format, but comics always has the collectors, and that's a big part of the hobby to a lot of readers, getting all the things and having them and putting them in the box. And a lot of the artists I speak to talk about this in a different aspect. There's an art collector market out there, and a bunch of the newer artists, younger artists, work strictly digitally, and they don't have original art to sell because it doesn't exist outside their hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because that's true. I mean, I've met collectors who are, you know, they call themselves purists in the sense of they won't even get books signed because they want to preserve that original piece of art the way that they got it.
Right.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right, and I've often wondered that too. If we went fully digital and you go to a convention, I mean, am I going to hand you my iPad and say, here, can you sign my issue of Wanted for me, you know? Then I have all these signatures on the back of my iPad, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I'm a true hard collector. You know, I like having the physical book in my hands, and I think one of the things too is I discover a lot of independence that way. You know,
yeah,
I love going in Artist Alley at conventions and talking to the independents and picking up their books. You know, and if it's I have seen the guys now that are trying to do just digital, and they have like a card, you know, and they're like, go online and check it out. It's like, oh, that's cool, but I'm going to go home and put that card, you know, in my drawer, and I'm not going to think about it.
Oh, my God, I have that drawer, too. I come from every convention, I open that drawer, and, you know, I hate to say it, but most of those cards go boop, boop, boop right in there.
Yeah, So, yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you know, I mean, in the market for, I think, to reach those people isn't at conventions. It is online because they're already online. Get them to read your book. But, you know, on the side note again, yeah, I'm not sure where digital's going either. One of your bosses, Jim Lee, I know he's really trying to figure out how to get that to work. And I heard an interesting interview with him where what he figured and I think this is true, one of the issues with digital was you put it out for $3.99, the same as the cover price. But in 2 weeks, that book's going to end up, or it may be in a month, maybe in 2 months, that book, if it's not a real high seller and ends up on the wall in your local comic shop, it's going to end up in the back bin for a buck.
Mm-hmm.
So he came up with the idea, and I think DC was the first one to do this, is after it's been out on the market for a little bit, let's drop the price a dollar, you know?
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense, and it to me, that was a good sign that at least people are thinking about it and it's moving in the right direction. But again, I still want to have the physical book myself.
Yeah, I hear you. I tend to read things in collected editions now, like a lot of people, I think, just because I don't get to the comic shop that often, or sometimes I might forget to get something that I'm reading. There are still titles I go get individual issues because I'm still just want that comic fix. But then I'll go again and get the collected edition of the thing I've collected in single issues, or read in single issues, just so I can stick it on the shelf and have it to read all at once.
So what are the ones that you keep up with that you really can't wait for the collected editions?
Let's see, what do I read regularly off the shelf? Saga is fantastic. Really love that book. I read all the Hellboy titles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
BPRD. I really love John's writing on BPRD. I keep up also with whatever titles I'm working on a cover run, you know, read all that stuff. Just to stay in tune. What else am I reading that's good? The other great thing I wanted to say along the way, since we're talking about switching to digital or not, I like going to the comic store and talking to the guys there and finding things that I wouldn't even know are out. Because I don't really go to forums and talk with a million people online about what they're reading. I like to go talk to guys I trust and, you know, I'm friends with and see what they're reading and get their recommendations because they know what I like. So I really don't want to see comic shops die on the back of digital.
Right.
Yeah, you have that problem now with books when, you know, normally you go to a bookstore, you talk to your friends, and now it's looking at Amazon ratings and, you know, looking for your genre and then looking for the Amazon ratings and figure out what the highest is and then figure out if you like that.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see that happen to comics.
Yeah, and I think it's... And when it's online, you know, you don't know these people writing the reviews. In fact, I've heard that a lot of Amazon reviews are, you know, they're not even real reviews by
right.
real people. They're people paid by Amazon to pump up the reviews on things. So.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it would make sense. It's something I would do if I were trying to make money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely believe that, at least if it's not Amazon, it's, you know, the publisher or even the writer. You know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Using proxies.
Right. So I noticed you didn't mention Superior Spider-Man in your list.
Well, that's so new. That just came out today, didn't it?
No. I need to ask what your opinion on Superior Spider-Man is, though.
Oh, I'm such a Spider-Man geek, you know. I'm reading the story. I'm really interested in what's going on. I don't get a whole lot more information than you guys do in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really just like a month ahead of everybody else or whatever. I 3 months if I have to have the cover done. I'll get a script or a partial script. So I'm a little bit ahead of the curve, but I'm reading right along with everybody else.
Okay, so then I'm going to ask you, don't have to answer this, are they planning to bring Peter back?
Peter who?
No.
Oh.
Really sad. But, you know, it could be the next issue. Right? You know, he's going to come back. Nobody ever dies in comics, damn it.
Nobody. But you don't know how they're going to come back or as who.
I guess that is it. It's going to be, well, okay, how are they bringing it back? Is it alternate reality? Is it struck by lightning?
Is Peter going to inhabit the body of another supervillain?
Oh, yeah, the Undying Spark.
Yeah, there you go. Who knows? I don't know.
Right.
Let's see.
Spoken like a good employee.
I'm a freelancer.
Well, that's true.
Which means I'm the kid sitting outside with a cup banging on the door looking for a crust of bread.
You're not making it easy for anybody listening that wants to get into the artistry. You're probably thinking, well, you know, I better have a day job too, I guess, huh?
Let me put it to them this way. When I started in this business, it was a handful of guys in New York. Now your competition is everybody. You got some amazing artists in Brazil, the Philippines, all over Europe, Spain. How many good artists are coming out of Spain and Italy? Oh, my God, a ton. And they will all cut your throat for the job you want. So you better get good. All this lazy art, that's not going to fly anymore. These guys are trained and they're good. So you're going to have to bring your A game. That's motivation. That's not stepping on dreams. That's telling you step it up.
Where would they start, though? I mean, speaking as somebody who's, I'm not as conversant in comics as my host here, but where would a new guy start? I mean, you post stuff to DeviantArt until you get, like, high ratings? Or I mean,
no. Oh. Not to diss on DeviantArt, because I love those guys. A lot of guys come to me and ask how to break in the business, you know. It's sort of a cottage industry. All of us at conventions that are working have to tell everybody else how to come steal our jobs from us. What I would say is I see a lot of people who have no clue about the craft itself. Some people can draw, but they don't understand storytelling at all. Some people are good storytellers, but they don't draw very well. It's a craft with many moving parts, and you have to learn the entire craft. I'll tell a little story, if it doesn't bore people too much. I had a really nice kid come up to me a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, with his portfolio and asked me to review it at a convention. So I looked through it and I really tried to give him some good criticism. I talked about the things that I thought that he did well and talked a whole lot about learning to draw from life, not just from comic books, because you could see he was just aping other comics and he had no idea how to draw things from life or really do perspective. So I must have spent 20 minutes talking to the kid. He didn't say a word. He just looked at me the whole time. When I finally got done, I asked him, do you have any specific questions you want to ask me? And he says, yeah, how did the muscles look? That's all he was interested in, was drawing muscle guys punching each other. You know, the rest didn't interest him. Mm-hmm. So, at that point, what do you say? You kind of throw your hands up and not much place to go from there.
Right. And I think, unfortunately, and I don't want to say that I'm getting old, but I think that's one of the
issues. I've got you all beat, so shut up. No.
One of the issues I think with youth today is that you know, a lot of parents I don't think are teaching their kids that it is a competitive world, as you stated earlier, that in this industry right now you're competing with the entire world and people will cut your throat to get ahead. And so when people are giving them criticism, creative criticism to help them lift them up and make them a better artist, they don't hear that, and it's tough. And I don't know what the answer is other than, they have to fail to learn that, oh, maybe I'm not, the best guy out there.
Yeah, there may be something to that, growing up in a culture where every kid gets to play on the baseball team and everybody gets a gold star just for trying.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't cut it when you're competing against people who have real art training and skills and ability,
Right.
It's one of the things that keeps me terrified and on my toes every day. We have some of the most amazing artists I've ever seen working in the comics medium today. And they don't have to go out to step on you. They're going to do it just by doing their thing. So, even guys like me who have been in the business a long time, if you sleep, you're going to disappear.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I have heard it from other artists that I know, too, that, it's... The industry's changed, especially in the last, 10, 15 years, where, again, the internet, everyone's there, everyone's competing, and it's becoming a little more cutthroat than it used to. There's... Because you also have stables, like yourself, even guys like, Larry Hama, Greg Capula. I mean, these guys are still in the industry and still working today, and then you have these talented new guys from all around the world coming in. I have to imagine that it's, it might be hard to sleep at night when you think about it.
Night terrors. I think that'll be the new name for them, the night terrors.
but at least it sounds like you're working.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that we've discussed how horrible it is, what do you like about it?
You know what? I still enjoy the process of making images. I love sitting down and creating. That's the most fun. In fact, possibly the most fun part of the process to me is just the design portion. Sitting down doing thumbnails, coming up with ideas is almost more fun than the execution a lot of times. At that point, you know what you're doing, and it's a matter of doing the best execution you can without getting completely bored and tired with it before you're done. I like the creative process. That's what keeps me going, keeps me in it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could see that. Again, John and I are developers in our regular lives, and there's that part where you're designing what you're going to do, you're planning it out. That's the exciting part. When you actually go to execute it and write the code, it's like, yeah, I've done this before.
Right. Next.
Yeah, except we don't get to draw big muscles.
Yes, see, I was going to ask you guys what you thought of the muscles, how they look.
Well, actually, I was looking at your Doc Savage covers, and I think it's the muscles that are on the muscles that are...
You know what a geek I was when I was a kid? I would go collect all those Bantam editions with those great James Bama cover paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I love that guy. I mean, ugh.
So, actually, my co-host did bring up the Watchmen series, the Before Watchmen series, and
is that because he's a hater?
No. That is my question.
there are haters,
man. Oh yeah. I mean, well, Alan Moore, I think, kind of led the charge on that, didn't he?
Oh, I'm sure. And
yeah, I mean,
see his point of view.
Right. He said he wasn't going to watch the movie, didn't want anything, you know, other than the original graphic novel, nothing exists. When you hear stuff like that, and obviously, I mean, I'm sure there's people who have said stuff to you, how do you react to that?
You know, that's the way they feel about it, and I'm not going to try and change their mind. But at the same time, we've been doing Superman comics for how many years now? Mm-hmm. And Batman comics for how many years? And Spider-Man? And the Watchmen characters were all derivations of other characters to begin with that were pretty much established. The Question, you know, on and on and on, the Charlton characters. So at the end of the day, I was hired to do a job, and I chose a character that I really was interested in working on and a writer I was interested in working with. So I'm not going to complain at all. From my end, I got to have an interesting experience. If you personally don't feel it's part of the canon and don't want to deal with it or look at it or pretend it doesn't exist, that's fine. It doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the healthiest way to look at it. You know, I actually thought it was brilliant that DC wanted to do this. You know, I thought it was about time. And like you said, Superman's been around. This is his 75th year in publication. You know, and yes, we celebrated that with a wonderful Man of Steel movie. And but at the same time, you know, there are other characters out there that, you know, let's take a look at them and, you know, let's take another look at them and look at them from different sides, different angles, you know, like, how did the comedian become the comedian? You know, that question was never really answered.
Because he was originally supposed to be somebody else, and then DC wouldn't license the characters for the alternate universe story. cracked.com comes to my rescue. They did an article about it. So, but, yeah, no, and the Watchmen characters are really interesting because they're more affected by reality than, you know, regular comic book characters.
Right.
You know, to the point of, well, dying.
Yeah, and I think that book really affected a whole generation of people who are writing comics now.
Oh, definitely.
It's pretty obvious that it did. That's the source code for a whole lot of the writers that we love right now.
It's gritty reboot. It's the gritty reboot Patient Zero, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, everything was comic-y, really. Now, you know, after that, people began to realize, oh, you know, this can be really grounded in reality and still be really good. And, you know, actually be more interesting.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what it was at the time, right? The Watchmen came out. It was gritty. It was more reality-based. But again, it was outside of our normal characters. Mm. It was, you know, they were their own characters, their own world. But then, The Dark Knight Returns came out shortly after that.
That's
when things really started to change.
I think the great gift that Alan Moore was given on Watchmen was the refusal to let him use actual characters.
Yes.
I think that turned the whole thing. Then it would have just been another story with, you know, the Question or whoever, instead of turning it into this iconic piece of fiction, not just comic fiction. I mean, it's been cross-cultural. I had people in my classes when I was still teaching who brought me that book that, you know, they weren't regular comic readers, but that was a thing that they discovered.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think I've met a lot of people who weren't necessarily comic book readers, but they've read, you know, at least the graphic novel, the collected editions, and they love it, you know.
Absolutely.
So you chose to work on the comedian? You actually had the choice of which one to work on?
Yeah, they had a few things were already off the table. I think Darwin had already set up to do the Minutemen. And let's see. I think that Adam had already pulled Dr. Manhattan off. But the rest was up to me. I got to pick which project to work on. And it was a combination of just wanting to do that character in general. And Azzarello writing it, he was one of the guys who I'd always read but had never had a chance to work with. So that kind of sealed the deal for me there.
So when you were working on it, did you go back and, you know, take designs from the original books to try to mimic that, or did you do your own thing?
I had the books, the graphic novel, open most of the time I was working. But because most of the issues were set in the Vietnam era and actually in Vietnam, I did sort of a combination of battle fatigues and his comedian costume. And also, like in the original, we made sure of the timelines and everything. If you notice, the mask drops away somewhere during the war. So we're very aware of him losing the domino mask. And didn't make a big deal about it, didn't talk about it, it just goes away. You know, because that doesn't really make sense to run around the jungle sweating. That thing's going to, whatever's pasted it on, is probably going to fall off anyway. So,
yeah. And it's funny because that goes back to one of those little details of storytelling that you were talking about earlier, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something, it's something the reader can just figure out subconsciously, like, yeah, it doesn't make sense for him to wear this thing running around the jungle. You know, but, it, you know, you had to tell that kid that.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed that little moment where we came up, the first iteration of the smiley face painted on his helmet when he basically starts the Vietnam War in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Right. Yeah, that was a great beat.
You kind of mimicked that on the cover of Comedian number one, where you had the gunshot blood coming off of his mask.
Yeah, I wish I could take credit for that, but that was Will's idea. You know, Will's a pretty smart guy in his laconic way. He throws these great little ideas out like he just dropped a crumb off his shirt, you know.
Have you ever done anything on a cover or one of your anything, any art that you've done that you wish people would see more of? Like, you ever put stuff in there that people seem to gloss over?
I put Easter eggs in now and again, but I don't worry if people don't get it. You know, I know that there's some nerd out there, he's going to have a complete meltdown. He'll probably go online and write about what a genius he is for discovering it. So, you know, why take his fun away?
Right. No, we can't do that. I love when you read the comments of, and I've seen people who have found stuff like that, and they think, you know, you'll have people go, well, the artist didn't do that on purpose. That was an accident, you know? And it's like, well, no, of course he did. You know?
Well, you can correct them when they're wrong. Yeah. Because it's more fun. Just let it hang out there.
Yeah.
Or you get the other way around, where the artist did something, it comes out by accident. You're like, oh, this means something.
Well, see, that's the genius of not saying anything about it. Then you can take credit for that, too.
Take credit where credit is due? Wait, no.
And even when it's not.
And when it's not. Okay.
Well, if it's your art, you can take all the credit you want, really.
So, all right. Well, anyway, is there anything, because we're almost at an hour now. We usually keep these around an hour. So is there anything that you're working on, or not anything that you're working on, anything that's scheduled to come out soon that you want people to keep an eye out for?
Don't stop them from giving us spoilers.
Doing a lot of cover work right now and writing with an eye to begin drawing soon. How's that?
That's good.
That's boring. It's a terrible answer. I'm doing, you know, covers for DC, Valiant, and Marvel right now, and working on getting this creator-owned projects underway.
Yeah, well, you're not in. We mentioned this in the. I mentioned this in the email. I asked you. You're not in San Diego right now. Was that a conscious choice or?
Yeah. It's. I have too many deadlines right now. And, so,
that's good that
I'd rather stay home and work than drop a fortune, go out to San Diego, pay for a room, pay for a table, and then spend the entire weekend just trying to make my money back for flying out there, wasting a weekend, buying a table, getting a room.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. Because, I don't know what other cons you do. I mean, I saw you in, what was it, New York, Wizard in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that show for you?
Because it's easy for me. It's an easy drive down. I love that show. And been doing a show in Europe in October, doing the Fat Show in Ghent. So that should be fun.
Yeah, I've heard there's more and more shows, comic shows overseas now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some really good European shows, and a number I would like to do that I haven't done yet. So.
Cool. I mean, are there a lot of comic fans overseas? I guess there are.
Absolutely. And luckily, working for Marvel and DC, a lot of my stuff has been translated into French, German, Italian, Spanish. You know, so I'm lucky to have people see my work all over the place.
Cool. I would love to see a French issue of Spider-Man and then translate it back into English.
I have a cat that speaks a little French, so.
I have to imagine, though, that's interesting, you know. That I'm sure things don't all translate, and they have to change them when they send them overseas.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'm terrible with language, so.
Yes. Have they ever edited any of the images in the comics when they send them over?
No. When I travel, sometimes people bring me the foreign editions, and they're usually really nice collections. You know, they're almost always, instead of single issues, in collected edition, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting story I ever heard about an edit, but it wasn't because it was going overseas. Another artist that I know, Greg Horn, had done an Invincible Iron Man cover.
Oh, sure. Oh, Greg.
Yeah, and it's a picture of Iron Man standing there with a teddy bear on the ground, and the city's destroyed around him. When he originally drew the piece, it was New York City. He drew the piece, and I think it was 2 weeks later, 9/11 happened.
Oh, geez.
Right. So Marvel's like, this is a great piece, but we can't publish it because of what just happened, and. You know, they talked it back and forth, and someone suggested changing the writing on the buildings from English to Russian.
Wow.
And that's what he did, and they published it. They I was like, okay, so apparently, you know, at least in 2001, we still didn't care if anything happened to Russia.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, so I always find stories like that interesting. But apparently, I guess, the art translates into other countries.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, at least Greg got paid for the cover.
That's true.
Hey, I just wanted to mention, it's been a while, but Transmetropolitan, somebody turned me on to that, like,
oh, yeah.
Maybe 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was before I really knew anything about any artists or anything, and I actually wanted to say I really enjoyed that.
Oh, thanks. Those were fine covers. only did a few, but they seemed to strike a chord.
And you won an award for them, didn't you? Or you were nominated, or?
Nah, you know, I'm the Susan Lucci of comics. They nominate me just to fill out the category.
The Eisner Award's going to find its way to you sometime, probably.
I'm not holding my breath.
If I had the power to vote for that, I would vote for you.
Oh, well, thanks. Not necessary, but thank you.
So, like you said, you're doing a lot of covers. Are you doing anything with Grant Morrison or Mark Miller coming up?
No.
What he's really trying to say is, what can't you tell us?
The phone's not been ringing from Scotland recently. That's not true. I talked to Mark recently, but it wasn't about working together. It was just, you know, catching up.
Well, that happens.
Nothing to report.
All right.
You're going to have to use better bait for that fish hook.
Is there anything else you want to talk about that we might not have covered? Because I know, like, normal interviewers are like, well, I've got this list of questions and all that. If we can give you, like, a forum to speak about anything else.
No, I don't really need a forum, you know. Happy to be working and hope to do it for 20 more years.
All right. So people can find you on Twitter, right? You at JG Jones, right?
Occasionally Twitter.
And you have your JG Jones art page on Facebook.
Yeah, thanks for the plug.
And you do have a... Do you have an art, your own site, too? I know I came across it before.
For the original art?
Yeah.
Anthony's Comic Art.
Okay.
Anthony Snyder is my guy who takes care of people who may want to buy some original art.
Cool. All right. So, all right, well, I'm sorry.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate you being, on the show.
Yes, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely, had a good time.
And thanks for all the art. Really appreciate that, too.
Thanks for meeting. Couldn't do it without you.
All right. Thank you. And for everyone out there listening, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door.
No, that would be bad.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak. Make sure you can reach out to ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John, and you can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. And if you want, there's a Twitter account @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.